The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, can scientific experiments help safeguard soldiers? Yes, maggots can be used to clean out wounds, and there's a logic to shooting chickens at jet engines. Mary Roach, author of Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War, is on the phone to answer our questions about the intersection of science and battle. Plus, ant stories. Nobodies have sent in more stories of their favorite eccentric relatives. The ants go marching one by one, hurrah, hurrah, and they ain't marching down to the ground. We've got ant stories by the hundreds. I'm Adam Felber, the man who tries to act as a weekly drill sergeant, forming up our discourse into a coherent formation, ready for inspection by you, our listeners. And now, please welcome the woman who specializes in guerrilla conversation, keeping the forces of logic forever on the run. It's Paula Poundstone!
Yay, Paula Poundstone!
Hey, how are you?
And if I haven't said it recently, happy, happy new year. Hey, Adam, and thanks to tonight's house band, Nobody, and returning champion, Casey Bozell. Casey is from Portland, Oregon. She's a violinist who is the host of Keeping Classical Weird. Check it out at keepclassicalweird.com. Oh, boy.
Wow. Yeah, you love it.
This new year, and I don't think it's too late to talk about it. It has been so stimulating and so different, you know, than last year.
I'm surprised to hear you say that, Paula, because most of the conversations I've had with you in the last week or two, you've been kind of calling bullshit on the whole concept of a new year.
Oh, no, it's vastly different. Vastly different. I get up every day and my furniture has been rearranged in the middle of the night.
You've been kind of a calendar denier, to be honest with you.
No, I'm not a calendar denier. What I denied was that our circumstances were somehow going to be different because a day had turned to another day. But I don't think that anymore. You guys really talked me into your side. It's really remarkable. What a difference. Adam, actually, speaking of differences, I have a new idea for our show.
Oh, wow.
I was thinking, because I listen to Pod Save America, which I really enjoy, and Jon Favreau had said in his New Year's resolutions that he would like to read more. And that made me start thinking, well, I hardly ever read myself. And so I was thinking that we should start a book club, and we should reach out to Jon Favreau to join our book club. But we... just, you know, us. We can have a book club.
I love the idea of a book club. I think everybody out there on our show does. You're talking about everybody here who records the show would read a book together.
Yeah. Yeah. And
maybe our listeners could read, too. And we'll get together on the show and discuss each week how we're doing in the book. And, yeah, you know, a book club is basically what you're saying.
What I'm saying is a book club. Let me put it another way, Adam. I was thinking that we could have a book club.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm more in favor of us having some kind of a book club.
Yeah, exactly. What I was thinking about, and just hear me out. I was thinking about having a book club. And what we could do is we could read the book.
Blew me away. Walk me over with a feather. So, that's almost like having a book club, Paula.
Exactly what I was thinking. And we could each belong to the book club. And let's face it, that's really what we want, is a sense of belonging. So we have with us this week, we have Ken, who writes our show. Well, as it is.
Well,
and,
such as it is. Yeah. Ken Lezebnik from Brooklyn, New York.
Well,
how are you?
I'm very good. Just reminding everybody, I'm at the moment still in Los Angeles. But yes, I'm thrilled to be here and very excited about the book club concept.
Let me just say, I don't know if you understood the concept, Ken. I know Adam kind of had a hard time with it. What we'll do is we'll read a book, all of us together, the same book. Not the same copy of the book. But we'll read a book together, and then we'll talk about it. By the way, I don't know how many of you listeners heard our shows over the holiday, but Ken Lezebnik out and out lied to us, saying that he was unavailable at certain points. He would say, oh, well, he couldn't be with us because he was going to be in Brooklyn. And turned out, nope. He was in Los Angeles the whole time. Well, so now we have surveillance.
Just over the holidays.
You know, Paula, you know how he was fooling us is he's been fooling us on this, you know, on this phone line by he's got a Brooklyn backdrop behind him.
Yeah, that's what it is. Plus, he kept calling in 3 hours early and he would say, oh, sorry, I'm in Brooklyn. Total bullshit. He was never in Brooklyn. The entire time. So we have Ken with us to start our book club, and we have Captain Crinkle, Bonnie Burns, and we have Tony Anita Hull, who I'm so happy to get a chance to hear from again. I've missed Tony Anita Hull so much.
It's our favorite hand puppet, Mrs. Culpepper. Mrs. Culpepper, you're welcome to join our book club if you'd like.
Well, how exactly will that work?
Well, you'd read a book while Paul is reading it, I would guess. It's a hand puppet's lot in life. You have to read at her speed.
So what you do then is you read a book, and then all of you read a book for the book club. Is that right?
Well, when you describe it that way, it sounds almost like a book club. But yeah, that's what Paula is suggesting.
Oh, that sounds lovely. I would very much enjoy that. And I do hope that John Favreau from that other podcast, Pod Save America, I do hope that he could join us as well.
I'm confident he will.
Yeah. Okay, so...
All right, then let's go around the horn and get people's suggestions for this book club. Since we've talked to him so much already, let's just start with over in fake Brooklyn, New York, Ken Lezebnik. Do you have a book to suggest?
I absolutely do.
He's in Brooklyn Village, which is a part of North Hollywood.
Little Brooklyn.
Yes, so what book should we start with?
So here's the... You know what? Actually, it is kind of a New York book, but here's my thinking. You know, with book clubs, to me... The notion is that you try to take a book that you would love to read, that you feel like you really should have read, but it's really, really long. And so you just can't bring yourself to start it. But with the energy behind you of a group of people, you can get through this book. So my suggestion is to read The Power Broker by Robert Caro. It is the definitive biography of Robert Moses, the man who remade New York City. It is a Pulitzer Prize winning book. It is a nonfiction history. It is one of those doorstop books. It weighs in at 1,336 pages. So it would be a big read.
Are there pictures, Ken? Are there pictures in the book? How big is the print?
Not big. My son Ben is almost done with it. And so I have my copy. There are photographs. There are photographs of New York and of Robert Moses and of the various projects that he initiated. It is a Pulitzer Prize winner. It's a great book, I understand. And that's my pitch. The Power Broker by Robert Caro.
It's over 1,000 pages. Have you
1,300.
Yes.
Have you checked Ben to make sure that his blood's not pooling up on his buttocks where he's been sitting while he read 1,300 pages? Because that's dangerous.
Well, Ben's a voracious reader. He's a much better reader than I am.
Wow.
But you know,
well, I like that idea, Ken.
And the thing about Robert Moses, of course, he's a very controversial figure because he was a huge advocate of projects and urban renewal projects, many of which were deemed very destructive in the long run. He, for instance, he wanted to put a highway through the middle of Washington Square Park because he believed in the future, the future of like the automotive industry and road and highways. He was a big advocate for highways. Fortunately,
and he was also behind the mandatory smoking car in all trains.
I didn't know that, but I.
Yeah, you had to smoke if you were in a certain car in the trains during Robert Moses.
He also he went up on a mountain one day and a burning bush started talking to him. Do you remember that?
Oh, you're thinking of the Israelite Bob Moses, often confused. It sounds like somebody's getting voicemail in the background here.
There was, actually. We turned the ringer off, but that didn't stop the voicemail. And that was okay. Moses. And he said, fuck the... You know, I love it that there was a bush burning and his decision was to talk to it. I think that we all know now that the first thing you want to do is, you know, extinguish it. Throw a blanket over it. Something.
Absolutely.
Don't talk to it.
Sigler, don't talk to the bush. Hey, we've got one suggestion there, and it's a weighty one. Let's head from fake Little Brooklyn in North Hollywood over to Sherman Oaks, where Tony Anita Hull has a suggestion for a book in our book club.
I do. I had five, and then I narrowed it down to three, and now I'm down to two suggestions.
Wow.
So the first is The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath. It's the only novel
uplifting.
She ever wrote, and apparently it's semi-autobiographical. So,
you know, I think we want it. Might save that for next holiday season.
I think I might have read The Bell Jar in college, but I have no memory of it.
I've read it too.
Captain Crinkle.
When my daughter was turning five, I gave her a bell jar themed birthday.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, her little friends that were guests. I gave them each one a mirror. And
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So I can't believe that's your and you narrowed down. You had five, and that's what you came up with, the bell jar.
I've been wanting to read it, and it's been on my shelf for a long time. So
yeah, I don't even think you should read it at all.
Yeah.
Well, okay. What's your second choice? A Brief History of Beheadings.
It's Brené Brown, Daring Greatly, How the Courage to Be Vulnerable Transforms the Way We Live, Love, Parent, and Lead.
Oy.
Brené Brown is amazing.
I think we're going to have five separate clubs.
Well.
Fine.
You're not wrong. Well, Tony, I like your suggestions. I'm not sure they have a prayer in this crowd, but
I'll throw out my third one.
Good Why? Omens. You're just making it more
Neil
complicated.
Gaiman and Terry Pratchett.
Good Omens is a great one. Good Omens is one of the best books ever written. I've read that three times.
There you go.
I love Good Omens.
That's it.
I don't know anything about it. That's why I'm speechless, because I don't know anything about that book, so I chose to say nothing. But if it in any way is related to these other themes of
it is not.
It's
Good Omens
it's
is
not.
A novel. Yeah. Good Omens is a novel by Neil Gaiman and the late Terry Pratchett, and it's a book about the Antichrist being born. But there's a baby switch. In England, in modern England, in London, and the Antichrist ends up going to this regular suburban household, and this normal baby ends up being taken care of by these dark nuns who think he's the Antichrist.
Oh, huh.
And there's this, it's a super funny book.
And then, Tony, was your fifth book that one about the healthy way to open up a vein?
Vegan suicides.
Yeah, so far, Tony's list has been more of a cry for help than
Brene Brown is awesome.
Let's move along.
All right.
I heartily recommend Good Omens to anybody who wants to read it. Let's move up, against my better judgment, to the Simi Valley. where, from horseback, it's Bonnie Burns. Captain Crinkle, Paula's manager. How are you, Bonnie? Happy New Year.
Good. Well, I hesitate to say Happy New Year because I know how fond Miss Paula is of the expression. But, you know, here I am in a black hole.
No, you still don't understand what I was talking about with that.
No,
but you know what,
I do understand it because I looked it up after we finished the last show. And
yeah.
I don't exactly... No, I don't think we're living in a black hole. But yeah. Anyway, okay.
Let me just say you have a tendency to skim.
I do. You're right. I do.
I don't think any of our listeners know what mom and dad are fighting about right now.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Anyway, okay. I want to say that I think this is a really good idea. And I actually, when I started looking around for a book, I took this really seriously and it was hard to narrow down the choice. There were so many things. But I ended up with a book called The Underground Railroad by an author, American novelist named Colson Whitehead. And he is one of four authors who's won the Pulitzer Prize twice. And for this book, he won the 2016 National Book Award for Fiction, the 2017 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction. It was number one on the New York Times bestseller list and longlisted for a Man Booker Prize, which I don't know what that means. He also was a 2000.
That's a big prize.
Okay. He received the MacArthur Fellowship, which is called the Genius Grant. And The Underground Railroad is... here's a little description. It's about a young slave on a cotton plantation in Georgia who's an outcast even among her fellow Africans. She's on the cusp of womanhood where greater pain awaits. And so when Caesar, a slave who has recently arrived from Virginia, urges her to join him on the Underground Railroad, she seizes the opportunity and escapes with him.
Well, that sounds fantastic. So it sounds like you just... spoiled the ending of the book.
I will say that my wife Kate's reading it right now. She says it is indeed a remarkable book. It is deeply serious. As she said, it makes 12 years a slave look like a walk in the park.
Oh.
Jesus Christ. I think Bonnie and Tony need their own book club.
Well, you know, all of a sudden my choice seems like it lacks depth.
What do you have, Paula? Is it one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish?
No, it was 50 years of TV Guide. Is that does that not hold up to the Underground Railroad book? Oh, damn it! No, I mean, along Ken's lines of, you know, reading a book that you knew you wouldn't do unless you had somebody to force you. I was thinking Moby Dick, which I own, I've never read, and frankly, I don't know how it got into the house.
Well, you know, Moby Dick is a good idea. My mom tried to read that book because she said it was one of her favorites, and I guess it was. She tried to read that book to us kids when we were kids, and... I think we all just got so bored we stopped after a couple of chapters. I suspect that might be because it's a better book to read than it is to have read to you because it's awfully long.
Well, how old were you when she was reading Moby Dick to you? It's not a book for children, really.
It does seem like an odd book to read aloud to your children.
I got to tell you, I was a voracious reader as a kid. And so my mom just kept loading books on me. By the time I was in third grade, for better or for worse, and I think half or worse, I'd read basically every book I was going to read in, throughout high school.
Mm. Wow.
And I'll tell you, some of those books that I read in third grade, like 1984, really fucked me up a little bit. So,
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess, I never made it through Moby Dick.
Well, this could be our chance.
You know,
these could all go on the list, of course, you know. It's just a matter of which one we're going to start with.
Well, Adam, what's your nominee?
I'm going to throw one into the hopper that is one that I have been meaning to read, just like you can. But I think this is a much faster read than most people's. You might have heard about this. It was a big book last year, if you remember anything about 2020. It's called Hollywood Park, a Memoir. And it's by this guy named Michael Jollett. And the reason he appeals to me is because I started following him on Twitter because he was funny and insightful and very political. And so I was following him during the thing. And then I somehow realized that I was also a fan of his band. His band is called the Airborne Toxic Event. And I suddenly realized that this person I knew from two very different places was the same guy. And his book is apparently just weird and riveting. I'll read you a brief description. Michael Jollett was born into one of the country's most infamous cults, subjected to a childhood filled with poverty, addiction, and emotional abuse. And yet ultimately, you know, he managed to pull out of that.
Oh, boy. Tony was with you right until the part where he pulled out of it.
But apparently he's like a really gifted writer, and his personal story is as good as his music or his tweeting. So that would be my suggestion, Hollywood Park.
So my second choice, which is Pat a Bunny, doesn't seem to have any relevance here.
Pat the Bunny?
Yeah. Oh.
You know, I have trouble with that because I learned in later life that you're supposed to pat that bunny. And that his name is not Pat.
Oh, Pat. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the one, it's the cardboard book with the fuzz of the bunny coming through from the through the cover,
yes.
From the first page.
Yeah, yes.
I'm a big believer in cardboard books. You know, six pages, you're done.
Here's what I suggest, is that we all vote on our second choices.
Hmm.
Ooh,
because we've all brought something to the fore, and this is already so complicated, and this segment has already taken 2.5 hours. So let's
I guess we are running a little long.
No, we're doing fine. But my suggestion is that I will name each entry, and if that's your second choice, speak up. Okay?
Okay.
What?
Sounds good.
Bunny didn't understand.
No, I don't get why we don't just say, now that we've heard them all, why don't we just say the one we want? We think we'd be good.
I think...
Like, I'll take Moby Dick.
His assumption...
Well, I'm going to choose my book.
Yeah.
Okay. I would be happy to read the Neil Gaiman book if I can add a chapter to it where the main character offs themselves. Just, you know... No, I would be happy to read that. I'll read any of them, but I think the Neil Gaiman book sounds good to me.
It is good. I've read it, but I would happily read it again.
I don't want to make you read something again, but then we have to go back over your third grade list.
Yeah, that's right. And as I said, I've read Good Omens more than once, but not in about 15 to 20 years. So I would happily do it again. All right, so let's go all over these, and let's have everybody just tell me what your second choice is. Paula, your second choice is clearly Good Omens. I'll read the choices again. It's The Bell Jar, The Power Broker, Daring Greatly, Good Omens, The Underground Railroad, Moby Dick, and Hollywood Park. Ken Lezebnik, what's your second choice?
My second choice, mostly because I'd love to hear what people think as they read it, is Moby Dick, which I admit I have read, but it's been a while since I read it. And I just would love to hear people's thoughts.
Okay.
Boy.
Great.
Imagine being an author. I realize that he's dead, but nonetheless, imagine being an author and hearing someone say of your book, I admit I read it.
Tony Anita Hull, what's your second choice?
Oh, I don't know.
Jesus Christ, Tony.
Go to Bonnie. I'm still deciding.
No,
she's in that vulnerable place.
Derek Rainer.
I think it's more important to you.
No, you know what? I really want to read Good Omens. So I'm going to go with Good Omens as my second choice.
There we go. We got two for Good Omens.
The Bell Jar was my first.
That of course. Is cheating. That's hella cheating. Paula, we know your second choice is Good Omens. Let's go to Bonnie Burns. What's your second choice?
Well, I'm going to go with Moby Dick 2 because I think I read it, I don't know, junior high or something. I don't remember it. I think it's great to do a classic. And I also think it would be great to not do a book that Adam's read already. So those are my reasons.
Okay. Those are good reasons.
She's also being paid off by the Melville family.
Sadly, this brings me to, we've got a 2-2 tie here, and I'm the last vote. Uh-oh. I got to tell you, I would love to read Good Omens again, but I'm going to go with Bonnie's reasoning in that I've read it already, and I think Tony's going to read it on her own anyway. So I'm going to go with Moby Dick. Paula's suggestion.
Moby Dick.
Let's read Moby Dick.
Oh, boy.
Yay.
Well, we've got a book club, everybody. That's really amazing. And
I hope that John Favreau from Pod Save America is planning on joining us to read Moby Dick.
I really didn't think it would come to this, but here we are with Moby Dick. it's just so relevant to our modern age. I can't wait to spend podcast after podcast talking about what Baleen is. But here we go. You guys
Keep
know that he
mind,
does devote
oceans,
entire chapters to describing whales.
The oceans are rising, so it's going to become more and more relevant as time goes on. So I think that's good.
You'll be quite surprised, I think. It's amazingly relevant still. Issues of race,
right?
Issues of individuality. It may surprise you.
All right, I'm looking forward to it.
Here we go. All right, now, Paula, Moby Dick is full of words, and so are you.
Oh, my gosh. What
a coincidence.
Transition. That was good. By the way, my dogs.
That's what I resolved to do in this new year.
My dogs are apparently taking Adam's wife's dance class because I can hear their toenails clicking all over my wood floor here. Nothing
that's
I can do about
it.
They're just dogs. So for all of our listeners who have resolved to improve their vocabulary this year, and Happy New Year again, what a fabulous year it's been so far. Listen up, because here's my word. It is inscrutable. It's an adjective that means impossible to understand or interpret. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. Every time I click on submit, the inscrutable online form pops back up again. Let's put this right into the vocabulary song. Hold on, I gotta find my Glock.
You gotta find your axe. Did you get it? Did you get a new Glock for the new year?
I didn't. I'm using last year's Glock, which this is the only thing that's the same from last year. Trust me.
Well, it'll be nostalgia for those of us who remember last year.
It will be. It really will be. Hold on here. I forget the song. There we go. All right. This week's word is inscrutable. It's an adjective that means impossible to understand or interpret. Lindsey Graham says stuff I just don't get. Last week's word was garrulity. It's a noun that means excessive talkativeness, especially on trivial matters. I have 9 cats. I used to have 16. For a while, I had 11. They all left my furniture in tatters. Now I just have an Adirondack chair because it won't collect hair or pee. The week before that, the word was insalubrious. It's an adjective that means seedy or squalid, not well kept or clean. I should have mopped up after my cesarean. Going back before that, the word was fie.
Oh.
It's an exclamation used to express disgust or outrage. Fie. How can Donald Trump be still on the stage? Fie. And not long ago, we had Putinesca. It's a noun that means pasta sauce made with tomatoes, garlics, olives, anchovies, etc. Said to have been devised by prostitutes as one which could be quickly cooked between clients' visits. Quick, make the sauce and get back to the toss. That's Putinesca. Let's never forget Gallimaufry. which I pronounced wrong until nobody, James Hyder, corrected me. It's a noun that means confused jumbler, medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think my song is replicable, replicable, replicable. But I do, I do, I do.
All right. Oh,
boy.
And, you know, bravo.
I tell you, Paula, your delivery gets more rabbinical every week with that song.
Well, there's something about 2021 that has just put, I don't know, more soul behind Mike Locke's performance, I think.
Yeah. I think it's almost, age and wisdom.
It's almost new.
You know, well, it's like a new thing. You're wiser, too. You know, that's one thing we haven't mentioned. I want to say quickly, Paula, happy birthday. You suffered a birthday over the holidays.
I did.
Do you feel different?
Totally different. Oh, my gosh.
I don't want you to answer now, Paula, but I want to preview something for our listeners, which is that I missed your birthday, and I feel just terrible about it. And so I'm going to grant you one birthday wish from me. Now, don't answer this week. You can think about it for a while. Just think of a birthday wish. It's from me to you.
Okay, anything I want?
Anything you want. Well, anything that it is my power to give you.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right. All right, so there it is. I just laid that on the table. You know, when British Air Chief Marshal Harris objected to a strategic change recommended by statisticians, he asked Winston Churchill, "Are we fighting this war with weapons or the slide rule?" Churchill replied, "That's a good idea. Let's try the slide rule." Coming up, the intersection of science and warfare. That's next on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Hey, everybody. As longtime listeners know, when Helix Mattresses first started sponsoring our show, Bonnie Burns somehow got the drop on me and made off with the first mattress. But in the intervening years, I have gotten myself a Helix mattress. I've had it for almost a year now, and it has improved my sleep. It has improved my life. I could not be happier. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, which I have, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, which is a mattress designed just for big and tall sleepers, and they even have mattresses made just for kids. Now, if you're like me and you were a little nervous about trying it online, or like Paula, who was screaming in fear of buying a mattress online, don't be. The Helix Sleep Quiz takes into account your individual sleep preference to match you and your partner with the perfect mattress. I took the quiz and I ended up with the great mattress for a side sleeper, the Helix Midnight Lux. Take my word for it, everybody. The Helix Midnight Lux.
Oh, don't want to take Adam's word for it. I don't blame you. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula and use the code HELIXPARTNER20.
This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Paula, I invited you over, but you fell asleep. HelixSleep.com/Paula. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Well, we're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is Whoa. Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinefo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On this day in unremarkable history, Pat Nixon said, "I know it seems impossible to believe now, but a more corrupt president will come along, and people will miss you."
Thank you, house band Casey Bozell. Paula, our guest wrote a book you loved, and then you found her on Twitter.
I did. Finally, Twitter has a use other than just sucking my life away. I loved the book Grunt by Mary Roach. And I bought it thinking that it was something entirely different than what it turned out to be. And I love what it turned out to be.
You thought it was about cavemen.
No, I thought it was about why someone joins the service. I thought it was about the mentality of service members. It's not. And okay. And by the way, it had a fantastic cover, and that's part of what drew me in. But anyways, and then as it happened, I found her on Twitter. And so I contacted her and asked her if she would come on. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. And that brings you right up to the minute.
Yeah, it brings us right to where we are now. And let's dive into a discussion here with that very author. Mary Roach is the author of the New York Times bestseller Stiff, The Curious Life of Human Cadavers, Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal, Packing for Mars, The Curious Science of Life in the Void, and Bonk, The Curious Coupling of Science and Sex. She serves as a member of the Mars Institute's advisory board and the usage panel of American Heritage Dictionary, and of course, she wrote Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. Please welcome Mary Roach! Yay! Yay! Mary, welcome!
Thank you.
So, Mary, I not only loved Grunt, but I read it, and then more recently I've listened to it twice. And so what drew you to writing about the science of warfare?
I was reporting a story in India on the world's hottest chili peppers, as one does.
Of course.
And in my reporting, I learned that the Indian Defense Ministry, they had a science branch, like a military science lab in Assam, in that state, where they had taken these peppers and they had made non-lethal weapons with them. So I went over there and I was reporting on that. And I was sort of looking around this lab. And I'm like, what else are you guys doing? And this guy goes, well, we're testing a leech repellent. only said it in an Indian accent, but I'm not going to do that. And I was like, leech repellent. Wow. You know, and it occurred to me that military science is maybe not what I thought it was, that it might be a little more interesting and weird. And so that's sort of how the ball got rolling.
It's really weird.
It's really weird. And really, yeah, I thought military science was all like how to kill people better and how to, you know, defense, like to Defense Department strategy stuff, weapon design, that kind of thing, which also exists. But there's this whole branch of military science dedicated, in fact, paradoxically, to keeping people alive, because you throw people into these extreme circumstances like extreme heat and extreme stress and extreme somebody is shooting you and extreme, you know, in a submarine, you know, you're down at depth. And if there's something happens and you try to escape extreme pressure, just there's just a lot of stuff that normal human beings don't have to deal with. And the military needs to keep their soldiers alive. And so there's all this research that goes on, and the military has tons of money. So they have these elaborate laboratories. And for me, any opportunity to step into some really bizarre world that I know nothing about just kind of floats my boat.
And all the individual topics like of each chapter were, I mean, they were all weird. And I imagine there was a lot that you didn't, right? Like what I'm trying to say, Marianne, you know, we're starting a book club. How did you choose the topics within the science of the warfare?
Just what seemed really interesting to me. I mean, the weirdness of it possibly has something to do with me.
But Mary, as long as we're on that topic, let's give our listeners a bonus. What's the weirdest shit that you didn't include in the book?
If it was weird shit, I included it in the book. I have the maggots in the book. I watched they call it a wet run of a penis transplant using two cadavers. I mean, that's just right up my alley.
And how is that really military?
Because IEDs, those bombs, roadway bombs, are so big now that, you know, an old landmine would blow off your foot, maybe the top part of your calf, but now they're so big that there's a lot of genital injuries. Sorry to say this, men. So the military invests a fair amount of money in repairing urethras and penises and also, reproductive stuff. And they were working on a penis transplant working it out using cadavers. So there was two guys, they were doing sort of figuring out what veins do we need to reconnect so that the whole new area is perfused with blood. So and since they're dead, they had to like hook up a bottle of blue dye, water with blue dye, and then let that go in. They were like the area would turn blue. They're like, oh, that's an important vein to hook up. But anyway, pretty surreal.
Wow. And I just want to tell our listeners, if I ever have to fight a war, and I hope I don't, and you're next to me and your penis gets blown off, I'm not going to be your donor.
You see, this was the problem. It took a long time for the first real one to happen. Because it took a long time to find a donor. It's a difficult thing to ask a family of a recently deceased loved one, can we have his dick?
But you know, you're the whole, I loved the people that you talked to about it in the book. I loved that there was, tell them about the soldier. Tell them what the soldier said who had had, what was it, 36 or 39 surgeries on his penis, and tell them what he said afterwards.
You know, Paula, you've just listened to the book, and
okay,
I wrote it
I'll
about
tell you.
Years ago.
I'm
so
sorry.
You're going to have to tell
I'll
the
tell
listeners
you.
What that man said. Let me guess. Wait, he said something like, they put something about they didn't tell me how to use it.
Right.
Was that?
That's exactly right. Yeah. He said, I've had, I can't remember, it's 36 or 30, right?
Yeah,
but say 30, I've had 36 surgeries on my penis. and no one has told me how to use it.
Exactly.
What does that even mean?
It means because it's not, they don't just replace it. No, you tell them. I'm sorry, Mary. Go ahead. You tell them.
You go ahead.
No, this is, I feel that we're interviewing you. I just forgot for a second.
Okay. But you've read the book more recently. I just wrote the damn thing. What he meant by that was that although technically the guys at Walter Reed, the surgeons, they're really good at what they do. There's no sex therapist on staff. So you have, and it's not just men who've had injuries to their penis. It's men who have erectile difficulties because they're on painkillers. There's certain drugs that, you know, that they're on for various other reasons that affect their ability to get an erection. Nobody talks to them about it. Nobody talks to a guy who's missing one leg all the way, half a leg, and both his hands. Like, here's some positions that might work for you. Nobody wants to have that conversation because it's the military and people are like a little uncomfortable with it. And there's this woman, and we're going to have to ask Paula for her name because I don't remember her name.
I feel terrible. I don't remember her name, but she was such a dynamo.
She was so great. She's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to start. I'm going to get people to do this, to come in, and we're going to have groups, and we're going to have therapy, and we're going to talk about it. Somebody wrote this book. I still have the book, not right in front of me, but it's just basically an illustrated guide to sex for people who are missing various parts, not just their penis.
Well, yeah. I know that there are women all over this country and this world who will tell you that there are plenty of men who haven't had multiple surgeries who don't know how to use their penises.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There was one. I love this, Paula. That was her. She goes to someone way up at the Department of Defense and is trying to get funding. And the guy says, well, honestly, I don't know what kind of sex the guy'd be having if he doesn't have a penis. And she's like, have you ever heard of a tongue, General?
Yeah. She said, do these men have tongues and can they be taught? That's what she said.
There you go.
And the truth is there were lots of sexual options for these people. But it just wasn't stuff that they talked about. One of the chapters, I think the one that really hooked me was the one where they were using the corpses as crash test dummies.
They were actually the corpses, the cadavers, or donors, as they like to say, the donors. The cadavers were being used to design a new crash test dummy specifically for vehicles that drive over exploding bombs, because you can't use an existing crash. Like, existing crash test dummies are either for frontal crashes or T-bone, like side crashes. There's nothing for a giant blast is going to come right up under your feet and ass.
Yikes.
There's no crash test dummy for that. So they were designing one. And in order to calibrate the dummy so they could then test the vehicles to see if they're safe, they needed, like 10 cadavers, whatever, I don't know, however many they were. And then they set them up on a platform and they had they didn't have the vehicle up there. They had a seat that's similar to the vehicle. And then they brought in some C4, I think it was, the explosive. They set it off and they filmed the whole thing. The cadaver is wired up so they know how much force it was. And then they do an autopsy and they see what kind of damage it was. So they're...
They stopped it, right? Didn't they were just about to do their thing and it got called off.
Yeah. Somebody was like, hey, oh my God, the military is blowing up bodies, which... Okay, if you see the video, what it looks like, your grandma was sitting in the back seat and you took a bump too hard. It's like, whoop, boom. Yeah, well, not until you, because it happens really fast. It's a bomb, boom. Nothing blows apart. Nothing, the skin doesn't break or anything. It's like your heel bone gets smashed. Your spine gets out of whack. I mean, it's that kind of injury. So nobody's getting blown to bits.
Oh, did you say that in the book? Because I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So it all just happens internally.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of musculoskeletal damage. It's because you're in this massive vehicle. It's pretty good at protecting you, but they found that guys were having, like, their heel bone was getting smashed. It's really hard to fix a heel. It's this complicated thing, and they're getting spinal stuff because the blast. They used to sit on a seat. Now they have benches designed so that it takes some of the energy of the blast, so it doesn't go right up your spine. So anyway, they weren't. They're not blowing them up. It does sound that way. I could see why you would think that. There is a big pile of explosives that they set off underneath.
I wonder why she think that there is blowing up when there's C4 charges under its seat.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, what I was struck by was how much care there was in the military, or somebody who had complained, yeah, right, for the corpse.
Which it's interesting. And what somebody there, the point that somebody there made was, I wish that we cared as much about soldiers who are alive as we seem to care about the dead. I mean, it's nice to be respectful for the dead, but if somebody donates their body, they want it to be used for this. They want it to be put to use. And the wonderful gift that dead people give us is that they don't feel any pain. They're like, sure, give me that C4, bring it on, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
People got really worked up about it. It went, so now if the military uses a cadaver in any kind of a impact test, whether it's automotive or a bomb, they've got levels of permission all the way up to Congress. Even if the person gave, then they have to go back and get double consent from the family.
That's so strange.
Yeah.
It is a very strange priority. I'm not in the military, obviously, but let me just say here and now, whatever, you can use my body to prop up a table for all I care.
I want to echo that. Yes, absolutely.
I'd like it to be used in a heroic way. You can use me. Can I sign up to be a cadaver in some of those experiments, Mary?
You can sign up if you live around Aberdeen Proving Ground. You have a better shot at it.
I'll move if I have to.
Well, you know, 19th century author Samuel Butler wrote, "A skillful leech is better far than half a hundred men at war." Well, he just wasn't good at rhyming. Stay tuned to find out more about unexpected things that help men at war. We'll be right back. The cat of the week is OJ from Rancho Cucamonga, California.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're Jesus, the best. You the be-
okay,
best
never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
A detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, is it Renee? And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now.
They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
And we're back with Mary Roach, talking about Grunt. Now, Mary, let me get to a couple of things that I kind of previewed up at the top of this show, because I'm sure our listeners are on tenterhooks, which is a very uncomfortable position to be in.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me about maggots.
Okay, maggots. Well, the maggot is a baby fly, and flies are militarily interesting because they are both the enemy and the friend, and I will tell you how. Okay, flies. Okay, going back to the 1800s and before, flies and the diseases that they caused, food poisoning, killed way more people than guns did, and guns and bombs, way more, like 7-1 in the Mexican-American War. I may be getting the title of that wrong. Anyway, a war down there. And here's the situation. Here is the situation. Battlefield, mess tent, not screened, just, you know, open flaps, everything. Flies coming in and out. Big pot of beans, say, okay, flies can land on the food. And where have those flies been? Over at the open pit latrine, because there, that's what was used, just a pit and like a sort of a railing.
Oh, man.
Hung your ass over it and you crapped. And so the flies are going, so you got one guy who's sick. The fly lands on there, picks up bacteria, flies to the mess tent, lands on the food. Now the food is infected, not refrigerated. So the bacteria multiply and multiply and multiply all day. And then it's time to feed the troops. And they all come and they get a dose of that bacteria. And now it's dysentery central. Everybody's sick. People are dying like crazy of dehydration. And so.
Yikes.
Yeah. So flies were the enemy. And it took a while to figure out that it was the flies that was the, you know, the link between the, you know, the sick guy, the bathroom, and the mess hall. Somebody saw, this stuff, lime on the feet of the flies. They knew that that's where they were picking it up. And they saw some of that on the food. And they're like, hey, the flies are going from, I think they would put lime over the, you know, the pit toilet to reduce the stink, or it could have been the piles of bodies. But anyway, flies are going from the filth over to the food. And the biggest contributor to preventing food poisoning in the military was air conditioning, because now you could shut the door. You could have a sealed mess hall, so no flies get in.
Wow.
So this, what I've just talked about, that's the fly as enemy. And to the extent that in World War II, they had fly control units, these guys going around with fly swatters had to kill a quota of 50 flies a day. I like that detail. Okay, moving on. Moving on. Now, so actually it was in World War I. It was somebody first figured this out. There were injured soldiers coming in to be treated, coming in from the field with these massive, you know, wounds. And that this doctor noticed that the wounds were infested with maggots. And of course, the people, the nurses were like, disgusting.
So
and he noticed that once you took away the maggots, that the wounds were actually, they weren't infected. There was this fresh, new growing flesh. They were healing well. He's like, that's kind of interesting. And he did some experiments and actually went on to treat some children who had a certain kind of injury that wasn't healing. I don't know how they got the parents to sign on for that. But anyway, it worked. So maggots, fast forward to today, maggots are a FDA-approved medical device. I can tell you the Medicare reimbursement code for the maggot. It's actually a little cage bandage that you put on if you have a wound that's not healing. Sometimes diabetics have foot ulcers that mm-hmm. are not healing, and they'll put this. It's a little, it's a bandage, but it has a little mesh.
How does that work?
Little, You put this, it's a little home for the maggots. It's got mesh.
I get that. I have plenty of maggot homes on my skin. But how does the healing, how do they end up curing you or healing you?
Don't they eat the dead skin? Is that it? Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, you answer. Silly
skin. They don't want they don't like live skin. They only want the dead skin. They also maybe secrete something antibacterial. They may possibly their secretions are helping as well to prevent infection, but they're doing what's called either debridement or debridement. People corrected me both ways when I was on book tour. I don't know how you say it, but that's like an important thing with a wound. You want to get rid of the rotting,
the necrotized flesh.
Yeah, necrotized. There you go.
I had my bunny Softy. One day I went out to move him from his area where I let him hop around back into his hutch, and I picked him up. And he had an injury, and when I looked carefully at it, it was teeming with maggots. And, of course, I was repulsed. I took it to the vet. He was overjoyed. He goes, well, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, came as a shock to Softy, I'll tell you that.
Well, see, I love that your rabbit is named Softy.
Well, it was a rare occasion on which I let the children name a pet. After Softy, I took over naming again because I said, you guys are going to go away to college and I'm going to be, stuck with a cat named Puffy. So I really had to step in, but I kind of did like...
you did what you had to do.
Softy was a great name. And my daughter, Twinkles, named him.
All right, how about chickens, Mary? Why are we... And I think I might understand this, but why are we firing chickens at jet engines?
Oh, the chicken gun. I had to work the chicken gun in there. You know, the reason, okay, the chicken gun, it does. It fires chickens, supermarket chickens. And the reason that this gun exists is it's for testing airplanes to make sure if they have a bird strike, like if you hit a Canada goose or whatever bird it is, that it's not going to smash the windshield or go into the engine and incapacitate the engine. So to test airplane parts for safety, they invented this thing called the chicken gun. So they just as a standardized thing to fire, because they could be like, well, we have to try a duck, we have to try a goose, and they just are like, to hell with that. We're just going to get a supermarket chicken. It's easier. It's better for the ducks. It's cheaper. We're going to use chickens. So it fires chickens at whatever part, like the windscreen or whatever you want.
I love that.
And it's the chicken gun. And I didn't really have a lot to say about it, but I had to get it in there because it's a chicken gun. And I sort of start the book that way, just sort of saying, okay, this is the only gun that's going to be in the book. If you want a book about guns and bombs, this is not your book. Go away. So that's kind of why and how the chicken gun ended up in Grunt.
Yeah, I would be so ashamed to be held up by a chicken gun. just a humiliating crime. So what was your favorite chapter? What was your favorite thing to learn about?
I have to say that the penis transplant chapter, just because how many times in a gal's life does she get to witness a run through of a penis transplant in a cadaver lab? Really interesting. Well, super interesting.
I'm only one woman, but I'm going to say never. I've never seen that.
And speaking as a man, I've seen very few penis transplants. I'm going to say none.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I mean... You would never have like a vagina transplant, right? That would just not be necessary.
You wouldn't have but you could have maybe like an ovary. No, you can't do that either. You don't, no gonad transplants, because that's all like, ooh, you're taking somebody's genetic material and putting it somewhere else. That's a
right.
whole.
That gets complicated legally.
Exactly.
Yeah, and biologically. That's internal stuff.
And with a woman's reproductive organs, the thinking was, because I asked about this, they're situated in a place where if they've been blown up, she's a goner.
Oh, right. I mean, she would be dead if you got hit. Okay, got you. Because we don't have stuff dangling. That's,
we don't have danglers.
Yeah,
no.
That's one of the perks, really, of being a woman is you don't have any kind of danglies.
Nothing hanging down, catching on.
You know what I really want to for those who are going to put Grunt on their book club list. There's a funny heart to this book. I think it resides somewhere in the conflict between trying to kill people and trying to keep people alive. And Mary, when you decided to take on this as a writing project, did you know that going into it, or did that evolve in your research?
I did kind of know that going into it, because the first place that I went to report the book was the military's, they have a morgue in Dover where anybody who's killed overseas comes for an autopsy, and they, you know, they leave the protective gear on so they can try to see what went wrong. How could we maybe have saved this person? Was the intubation done right, et cetera? Like what lessons can we learn from this death? But the people who do the autopsies, these guys, these doctors have seen so many young people killed, and they hate it. And they are in the military, but they are no fans of war. And it was really moving to spend time with them and to be there while they were doing their work. When I went there, I knew this would be the last chapter of the book. Because I wanted to end on a note about that, yeah, the military has gotten better at saving lives, and a lot of amazing things have been developed to save lives. But ultimately, you're trying to keep soldiers alive to win a war. You know, it's a strategy.
Right.
It's a Defense Department strategy. You can't win a war if you have no soldiers. But on the ground level, these people, these men and women, and not just in that chapter, but all of the book, the people who do that work don't do it from that viewpoint of let's keep them alive to win the war. They do it because these are young people and they're someone's kids, and fuck, they're dying, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. You really beautifully told that story. And when each chapter that I read and the characters that you introduced, they were, there was a heroic flavor to their work, and you did a really good job telling that.
Well, thank you. Thanks. I sometimes I would do readings and I would like choke up. I'm like, uh-oh, this is embarrassing.
Oh, Mary, thank you for shedding light on how science paradoxically preserves life in an encounter meant to end it. And now we're going to take that information you gave us and run it through the old Pouncedonator. Paula?
All right, Casey, if I can get a little background music on that violin, I'll tell you what the Pouncedonator spit out. Mary Roach has a library list of books to her writing credit. Her research includes a good deal of experiential reporting. Her well-known titles include, of course, Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal, and Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers, which nearly killed her. Her earlier work, Bust, The Curious Science of Law Enforcement, wherein Mary gets permission from a police chief to bring down a major drug cartel, didn't get the attention it deserved, but did cause her to go into hiding for several years, during which time she wrote her lesser-known titles, Stick, The Curious Science of Adhesive Strips, Spit, The Curious Science of Rotisserie Chicken, Hurl, The Curious Science of Losing Your Lunch, That, The Curious Science of What Someone Else Thinks You Shouldn't Wear, and Done, The Curious Science of Completion.
She's the author of Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. Thank you so much for being here with us. Mary Roach, everybody.
Mary Roach, my new best friend. This has really been wonderful. Thank you so much.
You guys, I loved it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
All right, thanks, guys.
Coming up, Tales of the Ants. Nobody's have sent us stories about our favorite relatives, the Anties. That's coming up after this. Fun fact, North Korea is one of only two countries on the planet that don't have Coca-Cola. So if you end up spending years wasting away in a brutal Pyongyang prison camp, I hope you like Pepsi.
We now join the French Trump Weekly Friday press conference in progress.
Mr. President, over here.
Thank you, Mr. President. Jimmy Tingle with the Boston accent. Mr. President, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said that he is open to your impeachment. A number of your cabinet members have resigned, citing your involvement in instigating the attack on the Capitol. You've put out videos where you are very clearly reading someone else's words from a teleprompter. People are referring to those as hostage videos. Some news outlets are actually reporting that you are feeling isolated. Are you feeling isolated, sir?
Fuck those news outlets and fuck you too, Jim Attingley, you enemy of the people. Those cabinet members were never on my side. I just threw them some crumbs. Imagine fucking Betsy DeVos resigning on moral grounds. Do you know that her name is actually Betsy DeVos? The D stands for her school grade average. And Mitch McConnell's wife, Chow Chow, she doesn't have a moral bone in her body. She's married to Mitch McConnell, for Christ's sakes. That's why I chose these assholes. They are corrupt as the year 2020 was long. I chose them so that when I cheated, built the taxpayer for money, and tried to amass more power for myself, they would not say anything. I am not isolated, you fuckwad. Why, just last night, Toby Keith stopped by to visit moi. Next question.
Mr. President.
You in the back.
Thank you, sir. Emmett Manning from New York Newsday. Mr. President, the Washington Post is reporting that your daughter Ivanka and her husband Jared Kushner did not allow the Secret Service detail that protects them to use any of the half dozen bathrooms in their Washington, D.C. home. Therefore, the Secret Service has been forced to rent a $3,000 a month basement apartment nearby at taxpayer expense.
Expense? I like the sound of that. I should have appointed Ivanka vice president. She never has flies on her head. Flies don't like that speckle shit she uses on her face. Did I ever tell you about the time I got stuck to her face?
And we're back. You know, a little while back, we invited Noboys to share stories about their aunts, and we didn't realize what a vein we struck, Paula.
A rich vein, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, everybody had some great auntie stories. In fact, we were only able to tell a few, and we got, I think Tony Anita Hulkin backed me up, we got over 100. We got hundreds of stories.
Hundreds.
Thank you, Tony, for backing me up with such alacrity.
She did. She backed you up, man. She had your back on that. Yeah. That was. She's so loyal.
We're going to make this a regular thing, because even though we might run out of auntie stories, clearly, you guys are not going to. Paula, do you have anyone that you want to share or anybody else around the table?
Well, I can't remember if I told you this before, but, you know, I have an Aunt Stormy.
An Aunt Stormy?
Yeah.
So do you have an aunt story about Aunt Stormy?
Yeah, she fucks the president.
What? Oh, Aunt Stormy, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a well-known story. No, I do have an Aunt Stormy. I don't think it's the same one. But maybe the story of my aunt and the president just hasn't come out yet. That's possible.
Totally possible. I have one that's not mine, but I like it so much I thought I'd tell it, which is that my friend Ken, who grew up in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, had a great aunt come live at his house. She wasn't well. I guess her mind was not doing as great as it used to. And she came and lived at his house in Bay Ridge when he was a kid. And one day he walked into the kitchen and saw her sitting on the steps leading to the basement in the kitchen. And she was eating mustard out of the jar with a spoon. And for Ken, that became a really touching moment because he thought, wow, this is amazing. I never knew that. This must be some kind of old world tradition. Here I am. I didn't think I had much to learn from this lady, and I'm witnessing something kind of sweet. I never knew people did this. And he was kind of enjoying the poignancy of the moment when she turned and looked at him with bleary eyes and said, you know what? It's not so good, plain. So that's my ant story, and it's not mine. It's Ken's. And Ken, if you're out there listening, I hope I did it justice. Anybody else?
By the way, for those who are wondering where Ken Lezebnik went, he just joined us to talk about the book club, and then he left. I think he's getting a jump on Moby Dick.
Yeah, that's probably
he
right.
He says that he says he had to go because he's in Brooklyn and it's later there. But he's not in Brooklyn. He's in L.A. It's weird.
He's in the little Brooklyn neighborhood of L.A. I got to tell you, during our commercial break, I went ahead and got myself a copy of Moby Dick. Because it's in the public domain. Yeah, because it's in the public domain, I just instantly downloaded it for free onto my the Books app on my iPad.
Mm-hmm. And you got started?
I got started. I'm one paragraph in. The protagonist's name is Ishmael, and it's in the first person.
All right, that's cheating. All right, do we have another ant story?
Well, if nobody else has one, then Tony Anita Hull, step up and read some of our nobody's auntie stories.
I have an aunt story.
You tell it. Oh, good.
Sorry, I thought Bonnie was going to chime in, so I was just deferring to her first.
Nobody got along in my family.
Okay, Tony.
Okay. So my Aunt Cindy was an actress back in the day, and she was on The Monkees, which I loved The Monkees and had the biggest crush on Davy Jones. And in the episode
I could really see you being a Monkees fan, by the way, of that show and
Monkees.
Everything.
Oh, I love him. So she was on an episode and she kissed Davy Jones and she said she'd never been French kissed before. And that was the first time someone.
Wait, she kissed Davy Jones on an episode? Oh my God.
Yes. Yeah. So it was the first time she'd been French kissed, she said. Because I guess Davy stuck, his tongue in her mouth. And I didn't talk to her for a year. After I saw that episode, because I had such a crush on Davy Jones and I felt so betrayed.
Yeah, he cheated on you, that's for sure. Tony, wait a minute. So she was on an episode and the episode, the script required Davy Jones to kiss her. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And instead of just a little peck on the cheek, now let me get this correct. Davy's not French, is he?
No.
I don't think he is.
All right. So there's no excuse for this behavior. So instead of just a little innocent peck on the cheek, he actually went on an exploratory mission.
Yes, he did. He did.
I love this story because not only is it, by today's standards, technically sexual assault, but you're jealous of that assault.
It has been a lonely, sad 10 months.
I know, Tony.
And this is the other weird part of it.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that she played a Mexican woman, and we are not Mexican. So that was offensive in retrospect.
Interesting. That would. So those are two things that couldn't happen nowadays. A white woman playing a Mexican woman and Davy Jones slipping you the tongue. I wonder if she knew my Aunt Frida. She might have known my Aunt Frida, who was an actress around the same time. And I told the story about Frida falling through her kitchen the last time we did this thing. But Frida was actually on an episode of The Honeymooners.
Oh, wow.
As it turns out, my aunts were talentless slobs.
All right. Well, Tony, what about our listeners?
There was the one who fucked Trump, and that was it.
Well, that's a talent. I don't know if I could get through that.
Yeah, boy, she longed for Davy Jones.
Yeah. Tony, what else we got? Read us some listeners' ant stories.
Yeah, so we'll get to our nobodies. So Sandy Remmers Hofstadter wrote in, "One day years ago, I walked into my aunt's kitchen and saw her flapping her arms furiously. When I asked her what she was doing, she said, 'I thought that maybe, just maybe, if I flapped hard enough that I could fly.' In all other respects, she is a perfectly sane woman that I love very, very much."
Boy, I am on Sandy's aunt's side on this. You know,
really,
flying would be so cool that it's worth every so often just checking it out. You know,
I'm on the completely other side of this, Paula. I think, despite what Sandy says, if you are standing in the kitchen flapping your arms trying to fly, you're not in all other respects perfectly sane.
No, I disagree. I think every now and then, although I can't wiggle my nose by myself, I will move it back and forth with my hand just to see if the thing in Bewitched could be true. It's worth a shot. It's a few seconds out of your day. I mean, if she said she sat in the kitchen doing that for hours on end and didn't, like, bathe, then I'd say you're in trouble. But I think just to check it out, nothing wrong in that. No shame in that.
I guess not. All right, Tony, keep us going. Give us another one.
We've got from Mary Krakow. Auntie Mame. Mame. It wasn't Auntie Mame. Hold on. Let me try that again. Auntie May bought Playboy for her grandsons because she thought it was a children's magazine. Play plus boy makes sense, right?
Wow. Oh,
I love that.
Yeah.
I kind of want to know what happened as a result of that. In fact, I'm not even sure that I can believe that. Paula, do you believe that story?
I do.
I mean, it's not like Playboy had covers that made it look like it was for kids.
No, you know what, though? One time I picked up Erection Weekly, and it turned out I thought it was like something about construction, you know?
Oh, right. And you love architecture.
It isn't. I love architecture. Yeah. And it turned out it isn't. So I can see making that mistake, play and boy. Sure. Yeah.
I personally love the idea of a girly mag called Erection Weekly.
Erection Weekly? You mean you've not seen that magazine?
No, I haven't. I guess I've led a very sheltered life.
Yeah. I used to work in a bookstore, so I saw a lot of stuff. I saw things I shouldn't have seen.
There is a find the Playboy bunny on every cover of the magazine. There's a Playboy bunny hidden.
So, yes, but almost every cover of Playboy magazine has a sexy model and lots of article titles that are really not, you know, highlights friendly.
Give me an example.
I don't know. I don't have any. Wait, yes, I'll look under my bed and look at my old issues of Playboy. I don't have anything handy.
I've been to your house, just there beside the couch. There's a big stack. Just take one off there.
my giant stack of Playboy magazines.
Yeah. We had neighbors that the dad had like a stack of Playboy magazines, and it was scandal to us.
But you'd look at them.
No, we just knew they were there. Maybe it was even more like a Boo Radley thing. Maybe we were just told they were there. I don't know. Wow. Somebody in the neighborhood said they had seen them. I don't know. I was in Playboy once. I was in Playboy once, just so you know. Yes, I was.
What were you doing in it?
I wasn't doing anything. It was a photograph.
Well, what kind of photograph?
This isn't Harry Potter. They don't move. I wasn't having an activity. It's just a photograph. Right, but
what I'm saying is you weren't posing semi-clothed or unclothed for Playboy magazine. There was probably an article about comedian Paula Poundstone or a news item, right?
There was. There was an article about comedian Paula Poundstone. And I had clothes on, but only because I thought it was more tantalizing.
I'm sure you're right. Tony, let's have the next story.
It makes people wonder what's underneath those several layers of clothing. And I think that's very tantalizing. All right, sorry, go ahead.
Longtime listeners of our show know exactly what's underneath those layers.
I don't know.
The cotton
Jackie briefs. Bivens wrote in.
All right, go ahead. Jackie Bivens.
Jackie Bivens wrote in, my aunt Aircel pretended for decades her husband just up and left her. Finally confessed more than 40 years later that she ran him off with a shotgun.
Oh, wow. That's good.
Yeah, that's a good aunt story. Aunt Aircel, I think.
Yeah, that's a great aunt name too, yeah.
Yep, just up and left me one day. Don't even know why. And then 40 years later, you know, it could have been that shotgun. Wow, that's a great aunt story.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the best that we have. I don't even have. I would like to. Hey, Jackie Bivens, if you hear this, if you got any other stories about Aunt Aircel, please send them in because she's my new favorite aunt.
Oh, she's a great aunt. You don't want to cross her. I'll tell you that.
Nope. All right, Tony, one more.
Yeah, from Lauren Matone. My aunt Millie once told her dog, you fucked for them, you feed them, as she dumped the dog into the box of puppies. She also told me I was just as good as those fucking whores when I was accepted into a prominent women's college. I miss her.
Wow. Boy. Her Aunt Millie really had a way with words.
I love that. I love that. Aunt Millie, I got into Wellesley. Well, you'll do great there. You're just as good as those fucking whores. Remember that.
Those are words. Those should be on a sampler, embroidered on a sampler somewhere. That's beautiful.
That's right. You know what? I would accept a pillow from any of our listeners, any nobodies, with that done in needlework on it.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Well, Tony, thank you so much. Those were great aunt stories. And thank you, nobodies, for those aunt stories.
Yeah, loved them. Now, Paula, let's do an inelegant segue and say, what's going on in the Poundstone product empire this week?
Oh, my gosh. It's, you know, the thing about the new year is it's been so busy. I've been making a goofy little game show called Nobody Asked You, starring Paula Poundstone, and I play the role of Paula Poundstone. You can watch it on YouTube or at my website, paulapoundstone.com. If you'd like to be part of the Zoom audience or bring a friend or family member to be contestants, earning points for how much you know about one another, contact us at nobodyaskedyou@gmail.com. I made a lot of video messages for people over the holiday. My dog Mo and my cat Theo growled, hissed, bumped the tripod, and stole focus on Minnie. They're standing by to interrupt a video message to your friend or annoying neighbor. Go to cameo.com/PaulaP33. That's cameo.com/PaulaP33.
That's great. And I just want to add, me and the comedian Jeff Cesario are still doing those sports simulcasts. We're getting into these NFL playoffs right now, and it's been super fun. We've been doing them lately on the Stereo app. If you want to hear more, you want to watch the game on a big network while listening to us, you can go get information at starburnsports.com on my Twitter feed, or just go to the Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone Facebook page, and you can find all about it there.
Hey, what's that noise?
What is that noise? That's really weird. Oh! Oh, Jesus, hang on a second. This is a little embarrassing, guys. Our phone here at Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone apparently has been off the hook for a long time.
You know, I was wondering why we haven't had a 100th caller for the 100th caller contest. Oh, my
That's
gosh.
Right. We've so been stuck at 99 for like 2 weeks.
We have been. And the phone's been off the hook. For those listeners who don't know, we have a 100th caller contest that we've been doing for, I don't know, a few weeks. And the winner of the 100th caller contest
like a year.
wins. Yeah, it's, you know, it's few, well, maybe 52 weeks or so.
Possibly more
wins
than a year.
Any appliance they want from Roger Federer's appliance store, and also, and
which
this
isn't.
Really primes the pump of excitement for the 100th caller contest, which is they would also get to hang out with Adam after the game. Oh my gosh, we've had callers going crazy for this prize.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, Paula, I have emotionally treated this contest like a terminal disease, in that I don't want to get to its end point, and yet because I dread it, and at the same time I just want it to be over with. So I'm glad that we found the phone off the hook, because maybe next week we'll have a winner to the 100th caller contest and move on with our lives.
Yeah.
If you want to enter our theme song contest, send it to us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. That's where you can offer compliments and complaints as well. nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. Also, subscribe to the podcast. You'll want to hear that next one. It's free to subscribe. You'll get it every week. No charge, no obligations. Nobody will come to your door. That is our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam the Felber. Special thanks to our guest, Mary Roach. We love her. And thanks to our...
Yay!
Thanks, Mary. And big thanks to our returning champion house band, Casey Bozell.
Yay!
Her website is keepclassicalweird.com. Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Mixing by Michael Hoagie. Star Burns production by Land Romo. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
Call me Ishmael.
I lost my focus there for a second. Oh, you know, Adam, is it me? Or does Captain Crinkle seem distracted today?
She seems really distracted. I wonder whether she's watching TV or reading Moby Dick.
She's multitasking. She's absolutely multitasking.
There's no
she
doubt in my mind.
She thinks you can multitask, and really you can't. It's
scientifically proven. You cannot multitask.
Yeah, it's when Mary Roach writes her new book, Bonnie, The Curious Science of Captain
Imaginary
Crinkle.
Multitasking.
There will be at least one chapter on the fact that you cannot multitask.
Yeah, no, she didn't seem engaged at all.
No, she doesn't. I think some of it has to do with the new year. The new year was so important to her. And really, it's the exact same as, you know, I don't care what the calendar says. You get up every day, it feels the same. Yeah, she was counting on so much more from 2021.
I'm sure if she was here.
I'm in a black hole.
Star Burns Audio, a podcast. A podcast network.